We are getting fresh in the kitchen in 5 minutes today with Peter Jansen. Now, he's not a celebrity chef, he's not a restaurant owner, he's not here to talk anything really too much about food, although there is an element of that. Peter Jansen, author, how are you?
Thank you very much. Good.
Excellent. Now, it's a rainy day here in Auckland, and you have seen a whole lot of the country in the last wee while. This is edition number 2 of your books, 1001 Things to See and Do in New Zealand, Best Things to See and Do in New Zealand. So, you've travelled, you've been here, there, everywhere. What's your favourite part of New Zealand?
Oh, everyone says that. Every part of New Zealand has got some little gem. There's no two ways about that, and that's just not saying that to fob it off. I think, though, two of my favourite places, three actually, I like Gisborne, the whole Gisborne area, and because it's a funny place over the summer, it gets very crowded in January, but by February, it's off the beaten track for overseas tourists. Mm-hmm. The weather's great, it's easy to get accommodation, the water's warm, there's nice vineyards, there's nice food, and I think that's a great place to, and great beaches. You can stay in Gisborne City, so you've got all the little city stuff, and within 10 km you've got 5 or 6 beautiful beaches, and there's day trips. So I really like Gisborne for that area. I like the Golden Bay area around Takaka, and again, it does get very crowded in the summer with all the camper vans going to Abel Tasman National Park, but it's got that fantastic area around Farewell Spit. It, again, it's got beautiful beaches, it's got a good climate, and plenty of things to do. So that's another favourite region. And I like the area around the Waitaki River, North Otago, South Canterbury. Again, it's not a place that gets lots of tourists. You can go there any time of year, you can get accommodation, it's inexpensive. And there's actually plenty of places to explore, and surprising little places that you can go to and you'll enjoy, very Kiwi places and absolutely away from the hordes of tourists that flock to Queenstown and Rotorua.
I must admit, I never didn't think that would make your top three, and being a boy from the Waikato, I thought that something would pop in from around that way, like Raglan or somewhere around the river or even the Coromandel beaches, but no, you've skipped those in your top three.
Yeah, I have, because it's probably because I know the area. But, you know, going to Coromandel is really interesting because, again, people think, oh, it's very crowded, and parts of it are. But, you know, without too much effort, and it usually involves a short walk, and when I mean short, you're talking 20 minutes, you can go to 5 or 6 beaches, and you, even in the middle of summer, there's a pretty good chance there's going to be 20 people on that beach. And so that places, even in the most crowded places, you can find somewhere really good.
Must have been really fun putting the books together. I know, as I say, this is the second edition of 1001 Best Things to See and Do in New Zealand. Now, the first edition is this in respect, but you've sort of updated it, added more, and the best thing I reckon is you've added contact details. So if you're flicking through the book, you can actually go, you know what, I'll phone ahead and see if I can fit into that vineyard for lunch, or if I can stay at that campground. So that's second edition is like an improved edition from number one. And the colour too is nice lime green. The other one was orange.
Yeah, no, the second edition, I think, is personally, I think it's much, much better than the first. And funny enough, it's one of those sort of things you think through a little bit more carefully. I assumed people would read the book and look at websites and then plan where to go. What I probably had underestimated, the number of people would carry it with them. And I mean, it's obvious now that I think about it, and that's why I've added the phone numbers. So you can check ahead, particularly if you're going in the off-season. A lot of places close from sort of like Easter through to Labour weekend. Not close entirely, but they might close early or might in so many days. I've expanded quite a few things, added a few more things in, taken one or two things out. So I think it's a much, much better book than the first one.
Well, I have both copies. I'm lucky enough to own both copies. Peter and I have a family batch, and we sometimes have overseas people or friends are staying, and I just leave them there on the coffee table, and I see every time I go there, I only get there once every couple of months, but you can see it's been leafed through and travelled around, and I think you hit the nail on the head. People take this book, throw it in their glove box. They even take it. I took it with me to Christchurch on the weekend. I was going down for work with Fresh in the Kitchen, but I thought I'm going to have some spare time, so I took it on the plane to have a bit of a read. And it's a big book, but not so big that you can't slide it in your handbag. 450 odd pages. I'm very impressed.
Yeah, but the entries are relatively short because in the end, you know, people don't read a lot. They'll read 2 or 3 paragraphs, to be really honest. And also, it's a guidebook, and a guidebook does exactly that. It gives you a guide to something, and you want to actually find out things yourself. And what I've tried to do with this book is have a really big variety of things. And part of the reason I wrote it in the first place is that Most of the guidebooks on the market about New Zealand are actually overseas guidebooks and the like. And half the stuff's in it you already know. And they also go very lightly over what there is to do and see. And I wondered, if I'm going to go to Southland or I'm going to go to the West Coast or Taranaki, I think, what am I going to do? I've got the accommodation sorted out. I know where I'm going to eat. I don't need to be told all that. I don't need to be told that Air New Zealand flies there and the weather is this and that. I want to know what there is to do and see. And that's where the concentration went on.
I think it's perfect because it does break it down region by region. So you've got it all broken down, you know, from the top to the bottom. And then, of course, at the back, it's all perfectly indexed. But I did love the fact that you've written a paragraph two, maybe three notes. And it's, in a nutshell, you pretty much nail what it is about. And you can go from to, like, for example, the vineyard. And then you can go, oh, yeah, so we'll do that today. And we'll go off and do the cafe tomorrow. And then we'll go and climb, do that walk the next day. And I think it's... Yeah, it's not too much reading, and it sums it all up in very nicely.
It allows me to pack a lot of stuff in there. So whether you, if you know, you get people who are interested in whether you're interested in the dolls collection or going for a walk or just a day on the beach or an old pub or a vineyard, as you said, or a museum, it's got something for everyone. So you'd be hard pressed to think, oh, there's nothing here I want to do because I've tried to cater for every taste. And one of the things I've really enjoyed about it is often are the characters you meet along the way, and especially people who collect things. And no matter what they collect, you can't help but enjoy it. You know, the guy in Hawke's Bay who's got a 100 Morris Minors, and the Elvis collector in Taranaki, and the guy who collects little model cars in Danny Virk, and Bev Donaldson who's got 2,000 dolls in Reefton. And these people, what I've found with them is that they're enthusiastic. So regardless what they collect, you're going to enjoy it. It's not expensive. And usually they charge like $5 to go. And they'll meet you and talk. They will talk to you as long as you like. So especially if you've got overseas visitors and you're wanting to meet real New Zealand characters, that's the sort of place to go to because they just love it. And they've got all the time in the world often. As opposed to the really touristy places which are going to be crowded and expensive. So you can mix it up. It's got those places in as well, but it's also got, you know, take Rotorua, for instance. It's got the Te Puia. It's got, you know, Waimangu. It's got the museum. But it's also got the guy who's got a collection of Caterpillar engines and trucks and bulldozers. The people who grow blueberries, and which is just, it's just a fun place to go to. So it really mixes stuff up. And there's plenty of places that are free, so it's not necessarily going to cost you a lot of money either, because, you know, if you go to Rotorua and you're going to do all the highlights, you really want to have a mixture of things to do you don't go broke.
Exactly. Cha-ching. I think that's what I enjoyed the most about the book is the fact that you have that you mystery shopped in respect. You went around and they had no idea you were putting this together. So you got, like you say, that enthusiasm, but you also got honesty and like you were just a tourist cruising around. And I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, I did that. I'd check out a place. They didn't know who I was. I did it anonymously. I paid my own way, so there's no freebies here. And then I can write honestly. And also the fact that no one could set things up. You see that stuff on TV and you're thinking, oh, it's all very well them having a good time, but they've got a camera and they know that this is going to go on TV and bring lots of people to their particular attraction. Well, I wanted to do it the other way around. So I went there anonymously. They had no idea who I was. And a few places I left out because the people were unbelievably rude. The other difficulty, and it was a challenge, is trying to work out what's value for money. And that's a really hard one to pick. You know, is $50 at Te Puia a lot of money, but you're getting a personalised tour? You weigh that against $5 for, you know, down the road for the Caterpillar Museum, and you're getting quite another experience. So, and also I wanted free stuff in there, so you can go and do a walk, and you can go to Rotorua, you can go to Kerosene Creek, which is a hot creek, and it doesn't cost you anything. So there is that sort of thing as well.
So it should be, by rights, the 1001 best things to see in New Zealand. It could almost be a travel Bible for everyone, really, isn't it?
Oh, you'd be hard-pressed to find things that didn't suit someone in there, actually. And I miscounted, so there's more than 2001.
But it's a good title.
It's a good title, but you're getting, you know, and there's more, and you're getting a little bonus, nice. another 40 entries, I think, over about 2001.
And Peter, this is the second edition. Do you think that you would do it again, tackle it again and do edition three, or take it to television, or what? Where to from here? What's the next professional / personal goal with it?
Oh, okay. Well, there was another spin-off called Worth a Detour, published by Hachette last year, and that's done very well, and it's focused on all the unusual and hidden attractions in New Zealand. So it took all the quirky things out, and people like that too. And what they do like about this one too, as I said, it's got, you know, the Sky Tower and Te Papa, but it's also got Woofworth the Talking Tui and hidden gems, and which are just bypassed over or not found by other people. Mm. And no, I hope there'll be a new edition, because I actually, essentially, it comes from being nosy.
Yeah.
just what's down this road? And I mean, there are some roads I haven't got down in New Zealand, but it's got down to roads now. I can travel around the country without a map.
Oh, that's impressive. Yeah. I also love your star system. So it says, I think the one star is, yeah, if you're in the general direction, pop in. Two stars is worth a detour, so make time to visit. And the three stars is you've just got to go.
Yeah, and okay, people say that's personal. Yes, it is. But I think sometimes when you're short on time, people might query the star rating, thinking, oh, that wasn't worth three stars or whatever. But at least gives an indication where to start. And you're going off Taranaki, you've never been there before. Where do I start? And then you can add the things that are of personal interest. So if there's something one star, but you think, oh, I really love old toys or dolls or something, I'll go there as well, because that's what I want to do.
Yeah, and you're the one with the expertise, so you sort of take what, as you say, as a guide, and then you go from there. And I did love all the inclusions, of course, being a foodie of pretty much every area has a vineyard or two or three in broken down in there, especially Northland. I didn't realise there's so many vineyards in Northland, for goodness sake. So I love the way you broke down great cafes, and even saying, look, you've got to try the, I think it was Ransom Vineyard near Warkworth, and you said you've got to try the limoncello with the grappa. You know, those little foodie wine inclusions were fantastic.
Yeah, originally I wasn't going to put food wine in at all, and then I realised, in fact, the first edition is a little thin on vineyards, but I realised that, in fact, vineyards are a major part of tourist attractions. People go to, you meet people travelling now from overseas who are doing a tour of New Zealand loosely linked by the grape wine-growing areas, and they'll fit the rest of the tourism around that. And also, as you said, all of a sudden you start finding these places in Northland, and you don't think of Northland as a wine-growing area, but in fact somewhere like Marsden Estate, and carry award-winning Chardonnays. You get way up north, the name escapes me now.
Okahu?
You know, and Karikari up there. And they're producing some really interesting, and Akeake, which is doing that Chambersin, which is a grape variety that handles tropical or subtropical weather. So there's those things, and they add to, I think, something like this as well.
Mm. Yeah, it's wonderful. And how long did it take to, I mean, the first one would have taken longer, I guess, than the second, but, and did you manage to share the experience with a loved one, a mate, or someone special, so that it was actually became almost / a holiday a little bit?
No, in fact, it's quite the opposite. Because when you take people with you, they think it's a holiday. And they have an idea that they're going to have a leisurely breakfast, then they're going to one thing, and then they're going to have a leisurely lunch, and then they're going to go to another thing. And you've got to get through 1,001 things quite quickly, because you've got to keep the book topical. You can't have it spread out over years. It's got to be pretty compact. So
how many things did you do in a day, you reckon?
It depends on how close they were. I could do 5 or 6 things in a day. And you're often just confirming what was from the first edition, so it's not quite simple. But no, it is a bit of a mission, and you can't muck around, because you want to provide the most up-to-date information as close to publication date as possible, and taking people with you is just not the way to do it.
So you did it all on your own?
I did it mainly on my own. Occasionally I take people for particular jaunts,
yeah.
But I'd say, you know, look, you know you're getting up at 7:30, and we're on the road at 8:00,
We know Eggs Benny at 11.
No, there's no Eggs Benny, and we're having a sandwich at 12:30, and we'll stop at 6:00. We'll have a cup of coffee, and then we'll do a couple more things, and then we'll finish about 8:30. And they go,
invite me on your next.
Well, that's not funny at all. But it is a job, and as I said, you have to be organised about it and systematic and compacted into the shortest time frame so that the book is as relevant as possible, as close to publication. Otherwise, it drags out too long.
Excellent. Now, do you think you got the travel bug? Like, you've dedicated this edition, I don't know who you dedicated the first one to your mum and dad, and thanking them for your love of travel. Did they give you the buzz for it, or did they take you travelling as a kid, like camping or anything, or did they just say, you've got to go and see the world, Peter?
No, they're quite the opposite. They didn't go anywhere, really. We went for a Sunday drive. But they were curious about the world. They watched the news, they read the paper, they read magazines, they took an interest in things elsewhere. And I think that gave me a general curiosity about travelling and just being nosy. And there's still things to find. You know, I've been up and down the country 5 or 6 times in the last probably 6 or 7 years, and there was always something new. Someone will say, have you been there? And I'll say, no, I haven't heard of it. And that's always great. And I just get to love New Zealand more and more. It just becomes more and more spectacular every time I go. I don't get sick of driving down the West Coast. Mm-hmm. I don't get sick of seeing Taranaki on a fine day. You know, I don't get sick of seeing just a beautiful beach in the middle of summer, and you just think, this is just so wonderful. And you get to appreciate more and more, actually.
I can smell book 3 already, the third edition. Oh, it's been lovely to chat, and whether you're visiting New Zealand, embarking on that little road trip with friends, or you just want to know where to send visiting rallies from the UK, you've got to have a look at this book. It's called 1001, plus more, 1001 Best Things to See and Do in New Zealand. As we say, it's a bit of a travel Bible. Peter Jansen, thank you. We are going to wrap you up with your best, because this is for Fresh in the Kitchen. It's all about food and wine. The best place you ate in the 5 or 6 trips that you had, something to eat. We'd eat and the best vineyard.
Okay, Little River Cafe on the way to Banks Peninsula. You go there and you want just to eat everything. And alongside that is the Eastbourne Deli in Wellington. That is just spectacular. My favourite vineyard. Now here's a strange one, and it's very unlikely, is Okahukahu, just south of New Plymouth. Now, it's a very tough place to grow grapes. Why those people are growing grapes here is way beyond me, but it's spectacular, and I was there over summer, and it was just a beautiful day, which is, I have to say, it's quite unusual on that exposed coast. And you have lunch, the grapevines go down below you, and just out to sea were whales.
Wow.
It was amazing, yeah, and okay, I'm not sure of the quality of the grapes, but as a place for vineyards, those people are exceptionally brave, and it's a spectacular spot.
Wine in Wales is kind of cool.
Yeah, you get that at Kaikoura too. On a good day, up on the bluff there, they have whales and dolphins come into the bay just below, if you're really lucky. I mean, how spectacular is that? You know, where else in the world?
Finish off with a freshly cooked crayfish and one of those little shitty caravan things.
Oh, yeah, the one along the Kaikoura along the just out from Kaikoura towards the point there. The little people on the side of the road have been doing fantastic business. Just grilled crayfish. That's it.
Glass of champagne. Lovely to chat. Find out more about the book. You can even Google Peter because he pops up very quickly. Peter Jansen, Jansen. And make sure you get your hands on this book, 1001 Best Things to See and Do in New Zealand. Thanks, Peter.
Thank you. It was great.